Hello, my name is Brian Novoselsky and welcome to the Over the Counter podcast. Today we're joined by Annie Lambert, Clinical Program Manager for Compliance Solutions at Wolters Kluwer. Annie received her PharmD from Washington State University and is also board certified in sterile compounding pharmacy. Welcome and thank you so much for joining me today, Annie.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
So today we're going to be diving into the recent news regarding GLP-1 compounding, what we've seen since the FDA's crackdown on marketing for compounded products, and the ways that pharmacists can bring clarity to patient concerns. So Annie, to start, obviously there's been a lot in the news with GLP-1 compounding all over the place with different companies, different telehealth companies, and different letters, stuff like that. Given the FDA's recent crackdown on the mass marketing of compounded GLP-1s, how should community pharmacies distinguish between legitimate patient-specific compounding under 503A and then the large-scale production of 503B outsourcing facilities?
Yeah, you're right, Brian. This topic seems to be in the headlines almost every day. So it's something that I know that I'm paying attention to, and probably many of your listeners are too. I think community pharmacists practicing the compounding of GLP-1s really need to be very well versed in these regulatory requirements and the changing landscape. During the times of commercial drug shortage, when we couldn't get the brand name products, that's when the 503B facilities were allowed to compound the GLP-1s. And then in some states, the 503A pharmacies were also able to dispense those doses to their patients as patient-specific doses. Since the shortage has been resolved, 503A pharmacies may continue to compound those patient-specific doses pursuant to a prescription or in reasonable quantities in anticipation of a prescription. Now, of course, we have to follow those USP 797 requirements and batch limitations. And so for community pharmacists that are performing GLP-1 compounding, they really need to be prepared to kind of justify their rationale for their anticipatory batch quantities to really avoid the impression of mass production. I think that's where the FDA is really targeting in on some of their quantities. And then for community pharmacists that are not actually involved in compounding, maybe patients are coming to you with questions. And so just being able to help them navigate what those differences are, where products can come from. Most of the patients, I think, are also having those conversations with their providers. So it's really a provider, patient, and pharmacist kind of conversation to navigate.
Awesome. Yeah, perfectly said. I'm glad that you touched on kind of the drug shortages and how that's led to now, because, you know, it's like one big, especially with these GLP-1s that are booming across like everywhere. So like with one issue gets resolved and this other one arises.
Absolutely.
So obviously there's things to like tackle with that, but wanted to talk about like the clinical aspects of pharmacists and their roles in helping guide patients. So from a clinical standpoint, how should pharmacists counsel patients on the safety and efficacy of these combinations, given the FDA stance that these benefits of the compounded GLP-1s remain theoretical amongst these formulations?
Well, again, most compounding pharmacies are used to navigating these conversations and focusing again on that where compounding pharmacy really fits is to meet a patient need. And so those involved in compounding are used to navigating the conversations about safety and efficacy. So while we cannot claim that they're similarity to a reference product, we can speak to the safety of the compounding process, the training of our personnel, and really the reliance on evidence-based literature to support our formulations and quality management processes. So focus on your team's abilities and your processes and go from there.
Awesome. Yeah, no, very well said. Obviously, it's not comparable with the manufacturers. The pharmacists aren't necessarily pushing it on. They're just there to help patients with all this stuff that they're hearing in the media and outside of healthcare. Awesome. So with reports indicating that GLP-1 active pharmaceutical ingredients or APIs, so getting to the nuts and bolts of like how these are being compounded, with reports indicating that they're sourced from unregistered overseas factories, what specific steps should pharmacists take to verify the quality of the source material?
This is definitely an important issue to talk about, and there's lots of steps involved. So supplier qualification and ingredient verification are really critical steps in the process. And I like to think that compounding actually begins at the loading dock, or maybe even further before the loading dock, by evaluating the vendors in the supply chain, such as manufacturers, distributors, and repackagers. There's a lot of different ways that product can come into the market. And so it does take some persistence to determine the actual source of the API, confirm the quality standards that vendor adheres to. And so that includes sourcing API from FDA registered facilities, really carefully reviewing the certificate of analysis that comes with each lot number, and then referencing a USP or NF monograph as a comparison. And so you really need to understand what each of those steps are to make sure that when each product comes in, that you are qualifying it against the reference. One thing that we should not be doing, legitimate compounding pharmacies really should never be compounding with anything that is labeled for research purposes or not for human use. That's really those things that are coming in through the gray market that shouldn't be making their way into our pharmacies. Now, we know that they're out there in the world, but they shouldn't be here in our pharmacies. And the FDA has some good guidance on for compounders on how to know your bulks and excipient suppliers. And so those are a good place to start by just looking through some of those things. But then again, doing your due diligence at each step of the supply chain.
Awesome. Perfectly said. Yeah, it's definitely teetering on the lines of like, last week we had someone on to talk about DSCSA and keeping the drug supply chain void of any of those like fraudulent things. And this seems to be like really pressuring to bring inconsistencies into the supply chain. And it's just another hoop hurdle that pharmacists have to navigate.
It is. It's another regulatory burden, but it's a really important one because you can have all the right compounding steps in place, but if you don't have the right ingredient, there's flaws in your ingredient or it's of poor quality, that's really going to affect your ultimate patient safety and outcome for the patient.
Awesome. Yeah. And obviously with the more and more GLP-1s grow, like the more and more they're going to need to really understand the landscape.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So the FDA, so talking about the telehealth firms and what the FDA has been doing, the FDA has recently issued dozens of warning letters to telehealth firms for implying sameness or genericity between compound and FDA approved drugs. So how can pharmacists ensure that their own marketing and promotional materials remain compliant with the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act while still communicating the value of compounded alternatives? What's like the best tip or advice for them to like help patients like understand that line between these are compounded products, but they can still really help you with your outcomes?
Yeah. First, I would say read those warning letters and learn from them what not to do. There's some very specific examples of language that the FDA saw on particular websites or things in their marketing to point out and say, we don't want you to do this. So that's very helpful. Learn from those that have already made those mistakes. And then what you can do, again, you can promote the experience of your personnel about what training they have. You can talk about the qualifications of your pharmacy, your room, like your 797 or 800 room. Maybe patients aren't going to understand what that means, but if they have people that are helping them, like pharmacists or providers in their family, maybe that are looking, they might have a little like clue into that. And then if you have any accreditation, such as PCAB, or if you're a part of the NABP Verified Pharmacy Program, one of the things I tell patients and friends and family is you have a right to know who your pharmacy is, where you're getting this medication from, and showing some of those accreditations or quality standards should be a boost of confidence and be proud of them because you worked really hard to get them. Some other things that you can do on your website or other marketing is also be very clear that you require a prescription for any doses or any services that you provide, because this is 503A patient-specific compounding. And so you just need to be clear about that. People can't just come and see a list of services, a menu on your site and say, I want that GLP-1 or I want that thyroid medication. That really is, again, going back to your provider. And so you could discuss going back to your provider to get that prescription. And then I think just in general, having some description about the purpose and benefits of compounded medications, about the compounding process, not revealing all about how the sausage is made necessarily, but of why we do what we do. And that compounding meets a patient need when it can't be met in the market else otherwise. And whether that's because there's an allergy to a particular ingredient or a dosage form that is not available in the market or some doses that are not available. So I can talk about those benefits in general.
Awesome. Very well said. I really appreciate you taking the time. And I think you're adding some very necessary nuance and understanding for such a complex issue that's only seemingly growing at this point. So I just wanted to touch about on costs and patient costs and how pharmacists can step in. As the FDA moves to restrict these GLP-1 APIs and major manufacturers file lawsuits against knockoffs, all the things that we know that's going on, how can the pharmacist's role be balanced in maintaining medication access for patients who can't afford brand name out-of-pocket costs with the necessity of adhering to these strict FDA quality and safety oversights.
Yeah. And I think that this isn't unique to GLP-1s, that the cost of medications are a reality for medicines across the board, for patients across the board. So it's really our job as pharmacists, whether you're at the corner drugstore or you're in the hospital or home infusion, whatever your practice setting is, to understand the options for your patients, because you're ultimately there to serve your patient, right? So this may include checking for insurance coverage, supporting prior authorization, suggesting a therapeutic alternative. Many times the insurance formularies navigate those things for us. But also for these GLP-1s, many patients are just foregoing insurance altogether because it's not often covered. So what are the other options there? And so that's where maybe pharmacy discount cards can be applied, or again, referring to a legitimate compounding pharmacy. So if and you're at your corner drugstore and you're not doing compounding, maybe building relationships with those compounding pharmacies in your area or looking them up on legitimate services like the Alliance for Pharmacy Compounding or your state board of pharmacy website, so that you can, again, help patients navigate and get to the right place in a quality location. And then I think regardless of how the patient obtains a GLP-1, it's important to talk about safe medication use, disposal practices. These are sharps. So you need to have, you can help supply them with sharps containers or alcohol wipes, injection technique, certainly management of side effects, and ensuring that they get appropriate follow-up. And just making sure that patients feel comfortable talking to you and trusting you with that medication. If they're getting it from somewhere outside of your pharmacy information system, it needs to be added so that it can also be flagged for your adverse drug reaction alerts, your drug interactions, things like that. You need to have that as part of your whole patient management profile.
Awesome. Very well said. I really appreciate it. Just wanted to, before we leave here, I just wanted to see if there's like anything that you wanted to like wrap the whole conversation around with, or something that we didn't really touch on that you think is like really important with this ongoing development, even though it's still, things are still going to happen and there's going to be more news. But do you think there's one last thing that you think we didn't really touch on?
This really does provide an opportunity for pharmacists, again, whatever your role is, if you're in like any of those practice settings. I don't know about you, my friends and family ask me questions all the time, and I may not always know a clinically specific answer or the process specific answer, but just knowing at least some of these general things so that you can be a resource for your patients, for your friends and family. Again, talking about medication safety, legitimate compounding, that there is value in it, and then knowing some of those questions to ask. Like, we are naturally skeptics as pharmacists and very good at thinking about the exceptions to things and helping folks know what of those questions to ask so that they can really help. Again, I keep using the term navigate, but it is a journey. You have to keep going through, and it's sometimes a very long journey. And even maybe check out some of those commercial websites that are out there for the telehealth companies and things, and just to know what kind of questions they're asking or how to qualify patients so that you can just have a little more awareness.
Awesome. Thank you so much. That was a perfect way to end this. Obviously, like we've been mentioning, like it's a big story. You're seeing it. It's from the highest level of drug safety and oversight. It's happening in real time. And everyone from patients, pharmacists, to even like health systems and people that run everything, they have to take it and digest it in real time. And that navigation piece is obviously very crucial for everyone that's involved. I really appreciate you taking the time to add some nuance, some understanding to this issue. And yeah, really enjoyed having you on today.
Great. Thanks so much, Brian. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this topic. I'm sure it's going to continue to evolve, and maybe we'll have a chance to follow up again when the next headline comes through.
Awesome. Sounds great. Thank you so much, Annie.
Thanks.